new edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Paul Dottino and Jeff Fiegel's with you for the next hour to talk New York Giants football after another dramatic nail-biter, a 22-16 win over the Chicago Bears in a windy MetLife Stadium that caused havoc for both the passers, the punters, the kick returners, the receivers, even the announcers, hint, hint, Jeff Fiegel's. And
you forgot to mention the kickers. You said punters, but you did not say the kickers.
Let's throw them in there, too.
They had a tougher time than the punters did.
And ultimately, the Giants prevail as, once again, the defense, for the fourth time during this five-game winning streak, has held the opponent on the final drive, despite the fact that they had gotten down inside the Giants' 30-yard line. Jeff, some initial thoughts about this game, which, in my mind, was just typical of what the Giants have become, a team that's gutting things out at the end.
They're gutting things out. Their defense is playing remarkable.
Yeah.
And one thing that I think, when you look at what the team was last year, aside from them not being able to win those five games in the last 2 minutes, what they've been able to do this year because of the defense, I think the other thing that we look at, or I look at least, is that this team has been able to come out in the second half and make adjustments like they weren't able to do last year. Now, you look at what this team did yesterday. You got a guy that's run for almost 80 yards in the first half, Vernon Howard, and then they shut him down to 5 yards in the second half. Okay, that just doesn't come by luck. That is adjustments, okay? And so that just further tells you that how far ahead this defense is. We all know Steve Spagnuolo's defense have always gotten better as the years as goes on with the times that he was here, with the exception to last year. However, this year, I think that you're right, Paul. This team says, okay, we're going to put it on the defense, and they did it yesterday. Now, last week, you got a little bit of both, right? You got the offense that ran for a couple first downs, and they kind of – and even Rashad Jennings in our postgame club said, hey, it was really nice for the offense to still be on the field and try to win the game.
Sure.
Well, they didn't do that this week. Looking at this possessions, last five possessions were punt. But I just hand my hat off to that defense and really JPP. The best game he's played as a Giant this year, no question.
You know, it's funny. When you look at what JPP did in the fourth quarter, he was truly a one-man wrecking crew.
Yep.
The Bears had four possessions in the fourth quarter, and Jason Pierre-Paul had 2.5 sacks and a forced fumble in those four possessions. The week before, and I mentioned this, I think, on one of our shows, Jeff, in the last 11 pass attempts that Andy Dalton of the Bengals had, he was pressured 7 times and suffered 2 sacks, which means on 9 of the last 11 throws he made, he was under duress. The Giants are really turning up the heat with that defensive line in the fourth quarter of games during this winning streak. They did it against the Rams in London. Remember how they harassed Keenum? And, you know, it just seems to me, and Flacco too, the Baltimore game. I mean, it's time and time again during this five-game winning streak. By the way, the longest regular season Giants winning streak since 2010. That this defensive line, despite all the snaps they're playing, and by the way, that's also been made a note of by the writers, JPP and Vernon are playing 96% of the snaps. They're going to wear out. They're going to get tired. Look, I don't know what's going to happen in week 13, 14, 15, 16. I don't know. But here's what I do know. They look damn fresh in the fourth quarter right now.
And so when we look back, why? What is the answer to this? You know, and to me, I got to look at conditioning. I got to look at the way that Ben McAdoo came in here in the offseason and changed a lot of the things about nutrition. Not to say that they weren't doing this before nutrition, because they were. Nutrition, the way that they're taking their practice days now, they don't have Tuesdays off anymore. Monday is their day off. They have a different philosophy on keeping guys healthy and keeping guys fresh. That's got to be one of the main reasons that these guys at the end of the fourth quarter are a lot more healthier and a lot more stamina than the guys that they're across from.
Certainly
don't you
looks
think?
That way to
I
me.
Mean, other than that, I don't, and you got, because we can't sit there and say, hey, you know what, they're doing a lot of substitution, the guys are coming in. They're not.
Those two guys are playing virtually the whole game.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
And by the way, I should add, JPP, after last season, was determined, and maybe contracts have something to do with it.
Of course
he was determined to come in this year and prove himself to be an elite player again. Well, and from the moment Vernon stepped onto campus, he has also been an absolute conditioning demon.
JPP has solidified himself a future in the National Football League. This was a big year for him to show people that he can come back and play and at a high level. And he's doing that. And I think that you know, certainly a hats off to him, because he has just done everything that has been asked of him and more. But, you know, another thing, too, is that you look at this defense in the fourth quarter. They don't – not only do they have JPP and they've got Olivier Vernon, they got Snacks and Harrison in there, too. Two guys that all these –
Hankins.
Hankins, that they have to pay attention to. So there's your production, and it's been pretty impressive.
Folks, thanks for watching us on Twitter. The full show is available now, or at least coming up very shortly, on Giants.com in a couple of seconds. And, of course, your Giants mobile app. So we continue here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513 is the phone number if you want to give us a call. You could also go to Twitter and go to hashtag Giants Chat, as the Giants now get ready for another game, which a lot of folks think is a, quote, trap game. They will be playing the winless Cleveland Browns. The Browns got upended this past weekend by the Steelers. But you see, I'm going to tell you, even though Jonathan Casillas on the postgame show admitted to me yesterday that there's that human element and maybe they weren't as sharp as they needed to be at the beginning of the game, I'm going to say to you this. Ben McAdoo is about as robotic as a coach I've ever seen. He is very, very dry, flatline, even keel, saltine cracker. I mean, that's just the way he is. I think it's rubbed off a lot on his players, because you know what? Even though the Giants weren't maybe quite as sharp as they needed to be in the first quarter yesterday, they at least got themselves together. And that was a hard game to win. Let's not kid ourselves. They had to grind and scratch and claw to win this game, Jeff. Had they slept walk through this whole game yesterday, they would have lost.
Well, I tell you what, they got lucky in a sense that the Bears just suffered some bad injuries
going
through that game.
They were hurting.
You know, Zach Miller goes out with a broken ankle. You know, you saw that he had three catches for over 60 yards yesterday. They lose Josh Sitton, the lineman. So they were already banged up on that offensive line to begin with. And
we kept
saying, look how much they're running to the other side where those other guys are the new guys. But you know, I kind of lost my train of thought here for a second. Oh, the trap game,
yeah,
all that kind of stuff. I think that I said it last week about trap games and being in the league and being on teams when you're winning and you got these games that are in front of you. I think that what I always like to look at was what happens if you lose this game. Not so much, you know, oh, it's an easy game, but kind of put it out there to the players like, okay, so if you want to think that this game is going to be an easy game, which, you know, in the NFL, anybody can win on Sunday, you got to look at what is the repercussions if you lose this game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and right now, the Giants, the way the Cowboys are playing, they have no room for error. There's no margin of error here. And really, if the Giants or the Redskins, and we look at the games coming up on Thanksgiving Day, a lot of big games for the Giants. The Eagles are playing the Redskins. You got Detroit playing Minnesota. All games that are going to mean something this Thursday. More importantly, that you look at this Cleveland game coming out of Thursday's game, how important this game really is going to be.
Well, I mean,
right?
Think about the Redskins-Cowboys game for just a second. I'm going to use Jeff's reasoning.
I know who I'm rooting for there.
Let's use Jeff's reasoning. If Dallas wins, the Giants must win to keep pace with them to still have a chance at winning the division.
Right.
If the Redskins win, the Redskins are half a game behind the Giants for second place.
And guess what? The Giants are now, they're getting closer to that game in December that could be for the NFC Championship.
And the Giants have already lost to the Redskins, so at the moment, they would lose the tiebreaker. So the game on Thursday, no matter which way that falls, Giants should have a matchstick lit under their butts to know that there is a dramatic reason for them to need to beat Cleveland.
And there goes my reasoning. You have to
look
at what will happen if we lose this game. So that gives you a little bit of motivation. I agree with you with Coach McAdoo. I mean, the guy is just steady as Eddie. He's just kind of got his team focused, and you know, they pay attention to what they have to do week in and week out. Doesn't look at statistics. He looks at this. He looks at that. All these things go into it, game planning for the next opponent. Now, we do know that the Cleveland Browns are horrible. They are. Their defense is absolutely the worst. They are so bad. They got almost 20 rookies on this team. But They're still an NFL football team. They still can win a game. Maybe just hopefully it's not against the Giants.
Well, they will be home.
They will be home.
And we all know about the dog pound, and those Cleveland fans are great football fans. They always have been. Also, I want to mention to you as well that the information out of Cleveland this morning, I don't know if you saw this, Jeff, the information out of Cleveland this morning is that it may be Josh McCown or RG3 at quarterback because Kessler got himself injured. I believe it was, concussion. If I'm not mistaken, concussion protocol.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be McCown, and I don't even know if RG3 is even practicing these days. You know, I know he was a hurt, and he might be start practicing this week.
Well, that's what they were suggesting. On the story that I had seen on Pro Football Talk, they were saying that RG3 may be getting back to practice this week, and therefore, there's maybe a possibility, and of course he knows the Giants certainly better than McCown would, that maybe Hugh Jackson might go RG3, but unless we get more details this week, it looks like Kessler's going to be concussion protocol. So, you know, that, unfortunately, if you want to promote the trap game theory, that would add to it in that the Browns have a bad quarterback situation. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But
well,
it does.
It does. And listen, I think that this team is focused. I don't think they're going to have a problem going on the road. And really, 3 weeks ago when we looked at this schedule and said these Giants have three home games, you got to win your games at home. They went out and did that, and they did it in an unbelievable fashion when you think about it, the games
dramatic.
That they won.
It was very dramatic.
It would be really, really sad to be able to go on the road and lose a game like the winless Cleveland Browns, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think this team is ready to go, and I will tell you what a difference a year makes health-wise and when you have talent and depth.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
All right. Couple things I want to take care of. Injury-wise, the Giants suffered one injury that appears to be significant. Roger Lewis, the receiver, in my opinion, was subjected to a late helmet-to-helmet hit while he was on the ground.
Let me just tell you,
he's
folks,
in concussion
he was
protocol.
Going nuts in the press box on this because there was no flag on the play. Clearly, he obviously got hit in the head and was called off the field from the medical guy up in the booth.
But somehow none of the officials on the field saw it, right, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, really, we didn't know it was going to happen. We were both sitting there going, why are they taking him off the field? Well, he got hit in the head. Well, why wasn't there a flag? Paul was going crazy. And then sure enough, over the loudspeaker, we hear that he's been taken into the locker room. So, yeah, most likely he's going to be probably out this week. So, you know, the Tavares King will be in there, and they'll kind of go back and forth like they always do.
So at the moment, that is the only significant injury we believe the Giants have suffered. And, again, we'll be listening for Coach McAdoo's conference call this afternoon to find out if there's any update and details on what's happening there. We did see that Dwayne Harris injured his hand during the game, but he came back.
Yep.
And, in fact, he was able to play through it.
Newhouse went out of the game, came back.
I believe he turned his ankle. I had him on the postgame show with you guys on MSG.
Okay.
And you know what? He fought through it. And it's like he said, hey, my guys need me. And good for him. So, you know, Giants appear to be relatively healthy. And then there's, of course, we're waiting to see what the rehab of Justin Pugh and his sprained knee brings forth.
Well, I think it would be
pretty much a lot to ask for him to play this week.
Yeah,
I don't think he's ready yet.
Yeah, and will he be ready for Pittsburgh the following week? I don't know. But you want to make sure that he's 100% going under this playoff run because you certainly don't want him to be 80% going in there and have the propensity to get hurt again.
No, that would not help anybody. Now, folks, we have an alert we've just been given. Information that has reached us tells us we have no telephones right now. Apparently, the phone lines are down. There has been some type of outage in the North Jersey, New York City metropolitan area. And so we invite you to go to Twitter, okay, and please post your questions on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. So push the phone to the side, get to your computer or your phone app, go to Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. And we will try to deal with your questions and your comments there. That's just the way it is right now, unfortunately. Again, lines of communication outside apparently have broken down in the area, and we're just going to have to
probably all this wind we've had.
Would it surprise you?
Yeah.
Did you see? My dad told me that after the game yesterday, the winds were like 35 miles an hour. I mean, it was going pretty good.
Yeah.
My dad told me that when he left the stadium yesterday, there was a very large lighting stanchion that had actually blown down across Moonaki Road by Reds.
Oh, great.
And the police had actually closed the road down just as the game was over and people were starting to come out.
Wow.
So I can only imagine how bad Moonaki Road was.
Detour.
I'm just saying. So, look, and let's make something clear. All right, let's talk about this for 1 second about the wind. We mentioned it at the top. The kickers and the punters had to deal with it. We had two missed extra points, missed field goal. You know, they had a miss as well.
We had a botched punt. Wayne Harris turned his shoulders, and luckily Eli Apple was there to make the recovery.
It was a mess.
That's a big play right there.
Huge.
That's they're in the red zone going in to score. So, and really, on a day when it's very windy, your special teams, you have to pay a lot of attention to ball handling. Both catching the snap from the kick from punting on field goals in the air. Got to be extra careful because those turnovers will cost you a game.
Let me say one thing to you that Amani Toomer said to me before the game when I was doing the SAP stage. Amani had said to me, I will tell you this, the way the wind is going today, Cutler will have an easier time throwing the ball than Eli because he throws a tighter spiral.
Sure.
And it will cut the wind better.
Yeah.
So it seemed to me, and I think you and I both agreed, that when Eli was going south, his ball was sailing.
Yeah.
And it was a problem because he looked inaccurate a number of times, but you just knew that the wind was playing havoc with the football.
And, you know, from Eli, you got to throw that football, and you can't, like, underthrow it and thinking that the wind's going to carry it.
Right.
It's just like punting with the wind is tough, too, because the ball never turns over with the wind. It just gets up and it pushes down. And throwing the football, it's all the same. But also, you got to understand that these aren't conditions that you can go out and practice in every day. You know, you once in a while, you hope if you're going to have a windy game on Sunday that it's forecasted that maybe on Friday or Saturday that you have some sort of a windy day that you can go out and get some work in. Mm-hmm. I know back in the day when we were at Giant Stadium, what yesterday was no, that's just a normal day, what it used to be. Everybody's so up in arms about how windy it was, but give me a break. But we would go to the stadium every Friday and just so that we could work inside the stadium and get used to the wind, the way it swirls around, so that when you get on the field, it's not a surprise to you. You could say, hey, you know what? I remember Friday, the wind was exactly the same as it was today here on Sunday. And I can't tell you how many times that happened. Then on Sunday, we'd be like, same win we had Friday, and we had kicked a bunch of balls in the stadium, and it worked for us. I know the guys do that, too. They go over to the stadium once a week and practice in there.
Give me a quick second, if you would, because just before we got on the air,
where you think
I was talking.
I'm going somewhere?
No, but I mean a quick
right
second about the science behind what Brad Wing did yesterday.
Sure.
I was relaying a story to the folks in the coaches' club yesterday after the game, and then I was just talking about it again with Jeff here before the show. In the box, I was asking Jeff before every punt pretty much, okay, as a punter, what's your direction? What are you thinking? What are you going to do? Because there are so many different kicks that a punter can employ when he goes out onto the field, and the wind kind of, almost like a starting pitcher, has a curve and a slider and a fastball and a knuckleball or whatever else he's got. It kind of directs you as to what to do.
Yeah, well, I actually got to talk to Brad before the show today, and I was asking him, you know, I was really impressed on the types of kicks you were using yesterday, and he was using that Aussie kick, which is an end over end, and he had said to me that it's very effective with the wind and against the wind, and so that's a real weapon that they have. These guys this is kind of a newer kick now. I mean, in the last 5-6 years, these guys have really perfected this kick. Mm-hmm. Years ago, we didn't have it. We just had one kick, and it was just the way you did it. But that is an advantage to him, and he said yesterday he was able to use it. The other interesting point that he made was that the punter for the Bears, okay, he's an American punter. Obviously, Brad Wing's an Australian guy. And I said, I've never seen a guy hit a higher kick in my life than Pat did yesterday, the other punter for the Bears.
Right.
He says that's because the American punters, when they do the Australian rules, they don't change anything as far as they just – it's like they normally drop the football. They do the same thing with the Australian. The Australian rules guys, they change the heights of their drop. So he says that the American guys, they keep it the same. That's why they get a lot more hang time than the Australian rules guys. Australian rules punters are taught to kick it lower because that's how they pass the ball in Australian rules.
Wow.
So it's a little bit of a difference. But really,
this is great stuff.
But the game, the kicks that they use, they've got about two or three different kicks, and we've talked about the boomerang kick before on the show with Brad, that he, you know, didn't use it yesterday, but that kick, that Australian rules kick, is able to cut through the wind, and it's able to to when you're kicking with the wind, get a little more distance. I mean, listen, Pat O'Donnell had a 67-yard punt yesterday. Mm-hmm. And both these guys averaged over 44 yards a punt mm-hmm. with nets of over 40, which was incredible in a game like that.
And one of the things when the Giants, again, were going south, and we were talking about how Eli's ball was kind of just kind of getting away from him, Jeff had said to me, you're going to go with the Australian rules kick, and you're going to get a lower line drive kick because that's going to be the one that's going to be able to get you what you need.
And in that situation, when you're with the wind, it's hard to hang the ball because the wind is pushing the ball down. So what you want to do is you want to get more distance, and you want to get extremely good location. So outside the numbers with a little more distance, back the guy up so that he's catching it as he's running back, and that gives the team time to cover. That little extra second that he gets to step back and get going gives the guys time to come down and cover. So that's what they were doing. Both of those guys were yesterday.
Let me ask you a baseball analogy.
This whole show is going to be about punting.
Well,
today.
You know, I appreciate this guy, and I appreciate the science of what he did for so many years. Like, I'm old school, folks. You know, I understand.
Yeah, you are. You are
That's
old.
Just the way it is. But let me ask you this. In baseball, when a guy's up at the plate and he's got that bat in his hands and he doesn't know what the pitcher's going to throw, and the ball's got all kind of movement, the knuckleball, the slurve, the curve, the slider, the sinker. And if you're a kick returner and you know that the punter is this good, that he's got five different punts in his repertoire, mm-hmm. and he can make all kinds of crazy spins and turns and everything with the ball, is that not in itself an extra burden that the kick returner has in terms of, hey, I really don't know which one of this guy's kicks he's going to pull out of his pocket.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that if your own punter on your own team doesn't have any of those kicks, how do you practice it?
You can't.
You can't. So when you're going into the game, number one rule is just to catch the football.
See, the Jugs gun just gives you the straight
kick. Yeah, and it gives you both. It can give you the end over end.
Oh, does, it?
Well, because they use that on kickoffs.
Okay, that's right.
So it's the same effect. But, yeah, I mean, and then especially when it's windy, the ball's doing all kinds of different things naturally. So I think it's really important for the returners just to, number one rule is to give the ball back to the offense. That's the number one rule in punt return. Give the ball back to the offense.
I love the fact that the Giants got him for a seventh-round pick from Pittsburgh
too.
A couple of years ago. Very good value.
Very good value. He's young, and he loves his craft. And he works at it, and he's a good kid, and I'm just really happy to watch him. I love to watch him punt, and, you know, not many people actually, you know, think that's great. But I sit up there, and it's funny because I can see the rotation of the ball all the time. I tell Paul when
sit
next
great.
To each other, I'm like, look at this. This is that boomerang kick. And he's like, what? Remember he said, what the heck is the boomerang
kick? I had never heard that before. And I've known this guy for a lot of years, and it's only like in the last year or two that I've actually said to him, I want to dig into this. I want to learn more about
it. You know what it's
stuff.
Like? It's like those baseball commentators that can pick up what a slider or a knuckleball or something from that far away. How can they tell you, you know, what that pitch is?
Well, you know why? Because until Wing got here, I had never seen that stuff.
No,
exactly. Weatherford didn't do that.
Weatherford did an Australian rules kick from when he was inside the 50. He
right.
did that kick.
That was it.
But that was it. And it was just a straight kick. I mean,
nothing else.
Brad does them all over the place. He's very talented.
Well, he's got a full bag in his feet. Or in his shoes.
I see this right here. Do you know the last time the Giants kickers missed two extra points?
And that's where I was going
to
go.
I do know this. I heard this on the radio coming in today.
Okay.
Because I do like to listen to sports radio, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. But it was mentioned on the radio that, and it's never happened in Giants history where two guys have missed two extra points in, you know, consecutive. Like, they score, he missed it.
Right.
We scored, they missed it.
Wow. I believe that. Although the kickers of yesteryear, I mean, they were not nearly as proficient as the kickers of today.
And neither was the snapping or the holding or any of that stuff.
And, of course, you didn't have AstroTurf or Field Turf or whatever else you want to call. So I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm not trying to be a wise guy here, but I wouldn't be surprised if Pat Summerall missed a couple of extra points in a game.
Sure.
He probably did.
Yeah, that's definitely – I don't know when the last time it was, but the operations and everything has gotten much better. But listen, even though there was two missed in this game, there was 12 missed in the National Football League yesterday, which brings you to the point where the league should be very happy with the rule that they put in because
it is
affecting football games, and I love it. I think it's amazing because the networks now, they are forced to emphasize that extra point.
Mm-hmm.
They really are. People are watching it. Mm-hmm. And now it's getting cold and windy, and this is the time of the year. You know – Paul, you've been around football long enough to know that when you miss an extra point, it somehow rears its ugly head throughout the game.
Well, because the mathematics will come back and haunt you.
They do, and they do.
We have a comment here. Actually, it was, I guess, one of the writers, if I'm not mistaken, Duggan, wrote, Eli Vick makes key plays with his legs and win over the Bears. And then one of our listeners has retweeted that. And actually, that's not a bad point. Eli did show some mobility yesterday.
He did. And you know what? And believe it or not, Eli does have some mobility. We just don't get to see it a lot because he's taught to stay in that pocket.
You don't want to see it.
I don't think that we want Eli Manning to be mobile and get out there outside of it, because I did see one yesterday that he kind of was a half slide, like he was kind of falling into a pool. Did you see it? He went down to his knee.
He's had that problem ever since he got into the league. He does not know how to slide.
But you and I spoke about this on the pregame show yesterday, about the importance of Victor Cruz being in this lineup. And just for that reason right there, the ad lib, the extension of a play when Eli gets out of the pocket and all the routes are just aborted. And what happens? Eli Manning and Victor Cruz, who have been on the same page forever, create a play that goes for a huge 40-something yard.
48 yards.
48-yard hookup. Okay?
Third quarter.
Now, that play right there doesn't happen with Sterling Shepard. Doesn't happen with any of the other young guys on the team. Doesn't happen with Will Ty. Nobody, okay? I would say it's probably going to happen with Beckham.
Maybe Beckham.
Okay,
maybe.
Because I think they're to the point now where they're right on the same page. But that is old school Victor Cruz, Eli Manning and when he's out of the lineup, we said this yesterday. When he's in the lineup, he makes one big play a game. Go back to him. The Dallas Cowboy game. Just keep going through the schedule. The Saints game. Mm-hmm. Okay. He might only have 3-4 catches, but he's got that one play that you can count on that's gonna make a big play.
That catch, by the way, did lead to what wound up being the decisive touchdown.
Sure.
That was the play that altered the field position before Shepard's 15-yard touchdown catch.
Okay. Now, I'm gonna go back a little bit when we were talking about special teams. We forgot to mention that the Giants come out in the second half, and Harris busts 46-yard return, which, by the way, they go in and they score a touchdown on that drive coming out. And the Giants' Achilles heel has been coming out of halftime, you know, punt. That was a big play in special teams.
Huge.
Which tied the game. Right? Was it tied the game?
16-all.
There it was, 16-all. So, big play in the special teams. I will tell you this, and I don't think it's anything that people don't know. The Giants' offense and the defense seem to be getting better. The running game is starting to come on. The defense is playing better. If this team is going to be a playoff contender and go forward, they're going to have to button some things up on this special teams a little bit, okay?
They've been giving up too many big returns lately.
Too many big returns. I think that Harris needs to understand that. I know he likes to make the big play. He made a big play there. Oh. And you said to me yesterday, Jeff, that's why he runs it out every time, because he knows he can make that. However, you got to look at the situation of the game and sometimes be a little bit smarter than that, a little better football acumen, if you will. But this Giants team is going to have to button some things up on special teams if they're going to go and make a run at this.
We have a comment from Nick Welsh, says, despite 7-3, it seems the Giants can't get any respect. Is it better that way?
Yes.
Does this team thrive on disrespect?
No. Listen, the Giants have always been better having people not pay attention to them, because the minute that they crown them something, it's you know what I'm saying? And I know we did it.
I would
rather sit back and lay in the weeds, let things just keep going in your business, leave us alone, get the media out of here, don't tell us how good we are and all that kind of stuff. Just keep winning football games.
All right, Ben Gruen says, you can't feel good about the Giants' fourth quarter offense. We're the only good team that refuses to extend leads at the end of a game.
Yeah, well, what do you want to say?
You know, here's what I will say, and Jeff and I talked about this also before the show. Given the fact that this team has apparently developed a lockdown defense in the fourth quarter, it is somewhat logical. Even if you may not like it, and even if your stomach and your heart and blood pressure cannot handle it, it is somewhat logical that you do go conservative. Do not take chances. Just play very, very safe football and allow the defense to do what it's proven it can do.
Let me tell you,
it is somewhat
folks,
logical.
I got to tell you, and you've heard it before, but Paul and I sit next to each other and during the games, and this guy right here, it cracks me up. He is just all over the place when the Giants are these close games, and he's just, and I'm not going to use any adjectives. But there are some that come out of Tino's mouth.
There's intensity. There's intensity in my seat.
Yeah, so that tweet kind of sums it up a little bit because when we get into those situations, Paul gets a little nervous. He's a little crazy.
Look, I'm born Italian. What do you want from me, folks? The oregano and the agita, it's inherent inside my makeup.
Okay, so if we're going to talk about that at the end of the game and relying on that defense – We cannot go through that sequence and not talk about number 21.
Yeah, because he's got picks now in four straight.
Five picks in four games.
Yes.
Leads the does he lead the NFL? No. I don't think he does.
I can check on that for you. Go ahead.
But he's got to be up there. But listen, this guy right here is – and I love his Twitter handle. It's the Humble 21, right?
Yeah.
I mean, could there be a better Twitter handle for a football player? I don't think so.
He's a good kid. And, he really is.
And I really think that he's finally, he's playing that strong safety. Last year he got thrown into playing free safety a little bit. He's where he belongs. He's a smart kid. He's understand. He comes from Alabama. Obviously he's
tied for the lead
from a safety position, which is pretty darn good. And just his presence in that secondary in the final 4 or 5 minutes of a game makes a quarterback is when they're doing their film study, they know 21 is back there. They know that he's making plays. Okay. And what amazes me is that and I'm going to take you back to last year when he dropped that interception to win the game. Was it against the Jets?
Had a Patriots one too, he had.
And now this guy he catches everything. So I don't know if he did, how many reps he did on the jug machine over the years, but he is tracking footballs better than he did last year, and he's just getting to be a better and listen, he's 16-9, 25 games into his career. Pretty impressive.
You know, and that was one of the two knocks on him coming out of Alabama was
did not
have great speed and range.
Right.
Okay. And the other thing was did not have great hands and great ball skills. Well, clearly he's worked on one of those. In terms of speed, look, you can only get so fast, but he plays faster. And why?
A lot of guys
because he's instinctive.
Yeah, instinctive. And now you know why Jerry Reese and, you know, they moved up to get him.
There's a reason for it.
And so it's for all the fans and everybody that talks about, you know, the Jerry Reese and drafting, things like that, you got to give him kudos for that one. That's
all
for
right.
Sure.
Weehigh Cleek says Aaron Wellman, and he's got a picture of Kevin Durant clapping you, the real MVP. The Giants strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Everybody has a part in what the success this team has had this year. Everybody.
And when you named Aaron Wellman, people will be like, who's that? Right? Mm-hmm. And that's okay with Aaron. He's okay.
Oh, it is.
He's
it
fine
is.
With that because you know what? His success is what the guys do on the field. And Paul and I have been around here enough to know how things have changed and what they're doing by everything when it comes to nutrition and this off-season workout programs and the in-conditioning and what they're doing, the GPS system, how Coach McAdoo is – what is this REM system that they're in now, the REM? Did you hear it? What?
It's a sleep pattern thing,
I believe. I know what REM is, but what does it have to do with football?
Well, because –
are they sleeping on Saturday now?
Well, he's been calling the guys in later and later and later during the day.
Oh, for some sleep-in time.
So that they have more sleep-in time and supposedly better quality sleep in the morning.
Well, that only works if you can sleep in.
And
I'm not one of those guys that can sleep in, so I would not be a fan of the REM system.
And I don't sleep.
And you don't sleep. Exactly. So, but I can see how the studies show you that the more sleep you get, the better the brain activity, things like that, and recovery time. So all of this is going into the equation of how this team is staying healthy, knock on wood, and I feel like it all has something to do with it. And it's really impressive. I've come in Friday some days, and the whole hallway from the where I come in on the entrance all the way down where the weight room is, there's guys packed in there. They're doing stretching. They're doing all kinds of stuff. Why they're doing it in there, I don't know. They have a big weight room, but maybe it's
they
just
do.
A But it works. It's worked.
All right. We have Eric Schaefer says the extra reps, laps that JPP and OV run after practice are paying off. Mm-hmm. And again, that's what I said to you before about since Vernon got here, he has been doing extra conditioning drills after every practice. He and JPP go out there with Aaron Wellman, and they start doing gassers. I mean, let me just say one thing about Olivier Vernon. I don't care what the number is on his paycheck. I've seen this guy work his butt off to be as good a player as he can be.
And that's why the number on his paycheck is what it is. Because a lot goes into a player's evaluation. It's not only what's on the field, but there are questions asked about these guys. There's when they do their research, what kind of a worker is this guy? What does he do? This all comes into consideration when they're going to give a guy a lot of money. And guess what? He's a prime example of a guy that leads by example. I mean, mm-hmm. when all of a sudden he's out there one day running by himself and somebody says, hey, why don't I do this? And next thing you know, you got half the defensive line out there running. But if that guy was – and I promise you, that's not something he just started when he came to the Giants.
No.
And when he was down in Miami, it's not, you know, that's not a fun place to run after practice. It's hot. It's hot. Conditioning, getting your body in the best shape you can, because I will tell you this, the more conditioned athlete you are, the better recovery you get. Rhino knows this. He's sitting right next to us. I mean, the better shape you are coming after a game, you're going to be able to recover better. And as you get older, that becomes very important.
A.J. Marshall has another comment for us, and it's a good one. 18 games turning the ball over is snapped. No turnovers, what I like to see. And he's right, and we didn't even mention that, but that streak is now over. 18 in a row. They almost turned it over. There was a ball that fluttered or two. Dwayne Harris had the muff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
So it bounced their way yesterday.
It's about time, right?
About time, and you know, in a game like it was yesterday in those conditions, you would think that there would be a lot of turnovers in that football game. But really, the team that turned it over lost the game, and that's the big statistic in football.
By the way, for those of you who do want them to be more aggressive in the fourth quarter, how about that pass to Jennings in the fourth quarter? That almost – I'm not writing on your shirt. That
expensive
almost
shirt. You're going to put ink on it.
No, I'm not putting ink on it. That almost got intercepted. Let's not forget that.
I lost my train of thought when you were going to about write on my shirt.
But, you know, understand that. I mean, there is a risk factor as much as you want to put a team away, and I get that. The logic here says, and Casillas said this, of course, he's a defensive player on the postgame show, as a defense, we're very happy to go out there and clamp it and shut it down. That's our job. That's what we do. I know it's dramatic.
Let's go back.
You know what?
Let's go back. What game was it just one or two games ago that everybody was like, yeah, we're aggressive and we're going to win the game. And what do? We throw the ball. And what happens? Intercepted. So there is a little bit of, you know, you got to be careful. But the Giants, you know, they want to try to hang their hat on running the football like they did against the Bengals last week in that four-minute offense and try to make some first downs. They tried to do it. They were thinking that eventually it's going to work because the running game did work yesterday. And so that was kind of what they're hanging their hats on. But there comes a time you have to be able to throw the ball a little bit, you know. So
at this point, they just think that it's a lesser risk to allow the defense to win the game than the offense. That can't continue through the entire season. It can't. I agree with you.
Well, I do one thing. They sure aren't afraid to risk it on fourth down. That's two weeks in a row they've run fourth down plays that have been pretty darn good.
And by the way, I was just talking to somebody earlier before I came in today, and the fourth and goal play from the three against the Bengals, they had Shepard in the slot lined up against Perfect, the middle linebacker, and Shepard's going to win that 10 out of 10 times.
Yep.
Okay? Happened again yesterday. On fourth and two from the Bears 17 on the Giants opening drive, Shepard was lined up once again in the slot, one-on-one against the linebacker, 15-yard crossing.
Is that what your little number is there?
That's number 50.
Okay.
That is correct. Who is number 50? Which guy was that?
Chicago's defense.
Yeah, well, must have been their sub linebacker.
Freeman.
Oh, Freeman. There it is. Yeah, Freeman. He has no chance. He's not going to keep up with Sterling Shepard. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, and a lot of times when you see Eli come up to the line of scrimmage and changing those plays, that's what he's doing. He sees a mismatch. It's all about matchups in this league. You know that. So we talk about it every Friday.
We could talk about it as a risk, and it was funny because when the Giants did it last week and we were in the booth saying they got to get the 3 points and this is a really crazy gamble, it's funny because the Giants didn't look at it that way because they knew what the Bengals were going to play. They saw it, and they attacked it. And it's basically, if you're going to be the candy store owner, leave your front door open as the kindergarten kids play, they're going to come and steal your candy. And that's what happened. Because, once again, really? The Bears lined up a linebacker opposite Sterling Shepard in the slot.
They left the door open.
They left the door open.
What candy do you think they would have stolen?
Tootsie Rolls.
Right.
Maybe Sweet Tarts, but probably Tootsie Rolls.
Sour Patch Kids. That's the one.
How about bottle caps?
Oh, you are so old.
Yeah, I know.
Come on. They don't even make those anymore, do they?
I think so. I hope they still make bottle caps.
The only reason I know Sour Patch Kids, I saw it on the news one day. It was the number one rated candy for Halloween.
Was it really?
The Sour Patch Kids.
Oh, my goodness. I'm looking for the other fourth down play. Here it was. Here was the other fourth down play. Fourth and three from the Bears 33, and they went to Jennings in the left flat. And this time, the Bears were smart enough. They played a zone as opposed to manning up with a linebacker on Shepard. And so Jennings went to the left flat, and it was 22.
Number he was 22, wide open.
Number 22 came over late.
LeBlanc.
Came over late, and Jennings got the first down.
Cladivius LeBlanc?
Yeah. So
that's his name?
So anyway, I guess my point to you is, as one of the coaches said to me the other day when I talked to him about the Bengals game, he said, is it really a risk if we know we've got the perfect?
No, it's not.
It's not?
No. And see, that's the problem between.
We think it's a risk.
There you go.
But they know it's not
yeah.
a risk
yeah.
because they see what the scheme is. Eli knows when he gets up to the line, we got this.
Which pretty much tells you we probably should not say anything about that stuff. Seriously. And again, when Eli's at the line of scrimmage, we don't know what the play's been called. We don't know what he's checking to. We don't know the change in protection. I mean, if we knew what all the signals were and the calls were, we might have
right.
a better guess to it. But we don't know. We're just make stupid
Ben Gruen chimes in again saying there won't be a tiebreaker with Washington because they have a tie.
Record.
Yeah, they have a tie in their season. The Giants don't, at least as of yet. Hopefully that won't happen. Nobody wants to see ties.
Well, where does the winning percentage come in then?
It counts as a half.
Okay.
So right now, you know, the Redskins have that half a win because of the tie. All right. We have here, let's see, John F. says, what can the Giants do to improve their fourth quarter offense? Couldn't put away the game against Chicago. Well, that's easy. They got to be able to run the ball better. It's just that easy.
They got to be able to get positive yards on first down. No negative plays on first down or second and get you in those third downs that they can put the defense in a precarious position where you can run or pass the football on third down. If you're in third and long, you know what they're doing.
Charlie, we knew we'd hear from Charlie one way or the other. He says, play 65, yes.
Not yet. And I thought if there was a chance for 65 to come into the game, it was this week because Newhouse was starting and that Geddes was a little gimpy, that maybe you might have seen a little bit of 65 in that jumbo package, but we did not see him. He was active, by the way.
Yes. We have, let's see, Otto.
That's amazing that's all we get from Charlie right there. Because he's not on the line, so he doesn't keep going on and on and on.
No.
So we get to rule the roost here.
Just three words. That's it. All right, Otto says, with the remaining schedule, who will be our toughest opponent? Well, it's here, Jeff.
I don't have to look at him.
I don't know if you could see it.
Dallas is going to be the toughest opponent. And don't be so sure that Detroit Lions team, who is a lot like the Giants that win games in the fourth quarter in really remarkable fashion, that Detroit game. And really, when you think about the Washington game at the last game of the season, that could be a big one.
Remember, the Detroit game is here, though, and potentially bad weather. Detroit's used to playing in that dome in Detroit. I think it's a little different for them to have to come here.
But good point. But my point I'm making is that they're a team that is learning how to win in close games, and they're doing it. I mean, they're in first place in their division. So
I don't know if it's ever fun to go to Pittsburgh.
It is in the summer.
Not in December.
And it's good to
That's a tough game.
It's good to go there in the summer for a couple reasons. Number one, it's warm. Number two, the grass is green.
Yes.
You go there in the winter, it's cold, and they play all those high school state championship playoff
games. College
games,
too.
College games, and it's just it's a sand pit. It's horrible. Horrible. Yeah. Remember talk about having problems kicking. That place is horrible to kick in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. And so that's coming up in 2 weeks on December 4th, Giants at Pittsburgh. That's a tough game. Pittsburgh beat Cleveland yesterday. They're fighting for their playoff lives, you know, just to be a wild card.
And they're banged up. Offensive line is banged up. Roethlisberger is banged up. So, you know, we can look ahead.
We can, I guess. Jim McKnight says, what factors have led to rushing for over 100 yards in the last two games? What's Jarrell Adams' blocking grade? I don't have that right now. I haven't graded the tape from yesterday, but I do know this. The Giants have absolutely done a better job blocking up front. There's no question about that. And Rashad Jennings has run harder, and he has shown more patience also in finding the holes.
I think this group collectively at the point of attack has been getting they're getting up on these guys and really playing well. And I think that the running backs are starting to hit the holes a little bit harder because those holes, they close up quickly. You know that, Paul. Mm-hmm. And so a little bit of better vision. And I also think that a little bit the change up with Perkins there. And Perkins and Rashad Jennings are two different runners, you know.
Very much so.
So I think the combination of those two have made a big difference.
Okay, Michelle, we have a comment here. Says, thoughts on what has changed making Eli more mobile these days the last few weeks running for first downs? Not common.
Definitely not common. I just think that, you know, that's just – I think that's out of – I think it's just
– just happens.
It just happens. You know, that pocket collapses. And if you watch Eli, he likes to slide the pocket a little bit, and he's only going to get out of outside that pocket when he has to. And teams lately have just not respected that speed. Just let him go.
Rob Schiller says, Landon Collins saved the Giants once again. Why can't we put the game away? We've already discussed that for a while. SNF Mikey says, OBJ has had impact on the game even when his numbers aren't big.
Of course.
Chicago rolled coverage to him all day.
Yep.
And he ate when singled.
And you know what? We talk about this all the time when we get our over under and all that kind of stuff. Is Odell going to do this? Odell going to do that? It's an ongoing theme that, you know, they're going to double Odell, and that's going to give an opportunity for guys like Shepard and Cruz. And if you look at the stats, and not only Shepard and Cruz, but you look on here, you got Will Tye, okay,
caught a touchdown
with five catches and a touchdown. Okay, 12. How many targets? They don't show it. Oh yeah, they do. Two targets for Will Tye.
No, that's two catches, five targets.
Five targets, okay. But look at this. Look at Shepard. You're gonna go ahead and you're gonna bracket Odell Beckham. Well, you were gonna try to throw it to Shepard. They targeted him 11 times yesterday, okay. And so that's how you get it. And I will tell you that I know Odell wants his numbers. I know he wants to get the catches. But from a team aspect, if that's what they're gonna do to win games, you better be happy with it.
Odell is a fierce competitor.
No question.
He's made it clear to us. He wants to make the playoffs. It's not about how many yards he catches. It's about how many wins the Giants have so they can go to the postseason.
Well, then he should be happy with this stuff here. He still was the second. He was targeted seven times, and he was the second leading receiver. No, actually, Victor Cruz was with 48 yards. Yeah.
But five grabs for Odell.
Yeah.
And let's see here. What else do we have? We have apparently there's some trouble with the Giants app. So we will get our technicians to check on that. Apparently on the iPad, there's been some trouble with the Giants app. So sorry for that. And we'll see if we can get that squared away tomorrow. Josh Lewis says, is Landon Collins the best safety this year? Look, he keeps doing what he's doing. It's going to be hard to keep him out of the Pro Bowl unless the Giants go to the Super Bowl.
The one guy that's playing pretty good that we knew is who was a top free agent this year was Waddle.
Weddle.
Playing pretty good, too.
Well, you know, I was a big proponent of signing him in the springtime, and the Ravens picked him up, and he's a good player, but he is slowing down some.
Sure, well, he's an
his
older
better
guy.
Years.
Yeah.
Had his better years. We have here, Shadow says, what's the timetable for return of Pugh and Jones? Brett Jones, I can tell you, Pugh is a little bit harder because that's a little bit more of a longer-term injury. It's not a one-week thing. But Brett Jones, they were hopeful that he would be able to do something leading into this game. As it turned out, it didn't work out. But he was walking around at the stadium yesterday.
And remember, last week was a short week. They had a Monday night
Correct.
Game. So, you know, this whole week, I mean, it's a whole week, it's an extra day, but it's really, last week is really short. You got that Monday game, and Tuesday, you've got to crank it up. You're already practicing again. And it's tough. Just like those Thursday games, man, those Thursday games they're horrible. Mm-hmm. Coming off a game Sunday, too. So the recovery, he'll get a little bit of extra time. And yeah, like you said, Paul, I think Jones is probably going to come back before Pugh.
I agree. Eddie says, my hat's off to Giants position coaches. No sacks, running for 100-plus, and no interceptions. Two passing touchdowns in brutal passing conditions.
Yep. I mean, guys continue to get better. I think the coaches are making adjustments on the fly, and that's all about good football. And really, you're right. It's a hat off to the coaches because the guys up in the box are watching the same game that we are. But they're a little bit smarter than we are. They're making adjustments on things and that they see during their week of preparation. And they've got a litany of stuff that they'll put in if they can.
Pat Colavito says, cannot let it go unnoticed. Eli using his legs to hold the Bears to no sacks and the step up on the floater to Victor Cruz was world class.
Yeah, and you know what? That's that improvisation that they did. And that was a really pretty play because he could have ran. He could have kept going. And when you looked at it on replay, they were looking at each other. They were talking to each other through their eyes. Through their eyes. They were just made a connection. And, you know, and that play is something that you kind of create on the run, but it's something you definitely talk about in the meeting rooms if we get in a situation like this. Not particularly against the Bears, but throughout the whole season. We get in a play and it's broken down. What do you want to do?
Will says, I'd rather have Dallas beat Washington because the Skins are half a game behind us. Rather play in the wild card game than no playoffs at all.
No, I disagree. I want the division win so we get a home game, okay? And that possibly, you never know, you could get a bye. I don't know. I can't tell you that, you know, if they will or not, but you never know.
Okay, let's see here.
Although the Giants have done pretty well coming into the playoffs as a wild card team the last couple Super Bowls.
That is true. Carly Martinez says Giants defense on third downs of 7, 8, and 9 yards has stiffened. It's been a tale of two seasons, first 5 games compared to the last 5. And he gives us some chart. It's a screenshot that says in those situations, Giants were giving up 31% conversions. And in the 5-game winning streak, they're only giving up almost 20% conversions. They've certainly gotten better on defense. Let's not kid ourselves. The gelling of this D has been terrific.
Well, when I look at this statistic, it tells me a little bit more on first and second down, what they're doing to get them in 7, 8, and 9 yards. That's pretty good.
Man,
that's
no
pretty
question.
Good. And that right there is Hankins and Snacks.
All right, let's see.
Into that game yesterday, those two had 10 tackles for loss combined. That's, you know, I know those aren't sacks, but those are negative plays.
No doubt. And by the way, let's not forget the batted pass that JPP had yesterday. Gives
Again,
it 8 for the season.
Two last week, 1 this week.
Which leads NFL defensive linemen. Dunlop had 7 for the Bengals last week, and he was tied with JPP. And now
7 total.
Yeah. Now JPP has 8.
There.
So I don't think Dunlop had one this week. Although I'm not sure. I didn't watch the Bengals game, so I apologize. They might have even been on a bye.
Did you watch the game last night, the Green Bay-Washington game?
Part of it.
Peppers had a knockdown where he was in the air when he went up, and some dude hit him and just laid him out. It was a good play.
We only have a few minutes left, so I want to finish these up, Jeff. We have a guy here.
Oh, that's a good one there. That's exactly right. We talked a lot about that in the offseason.
Ben Gruen says Collins dropped 15 pounds, worked on catching. He's faster. Catcher still looks like a truck. Hits like a truck. All that stuff is true. He's in his second year. He's more experienced. He's learned a lot from playing.
No question.
And you know what? He's the typical guy who you draft high, has some rookie issues, and then it just happens.
Yeah.
The light goes on, and he just becomes a heck of a player.
And he certainly has not had the sophomore slump that some of these guys go into.
No, this is what you want when you draft these guys.
Yeah.
You want them to show that big uptick. as soon as possible and then to continue upwards for the rest of their careers.
He just loves to play football. This guy he just loves, and he's like a sponge. He's just absorbing everything he can, and it's improving his skill.
Okay. Gene Messenkopf says, Paul, how do you spell Ojeda? It's acid indigestion. I don't know that I get that unless he's talking about when he was a Mets fan and Bob Ojeda was their pitcher, I'm guessing. Okay. I don't know. I don't know. Let's see. Oh, very interesting picture of Collins punching a bear. Some gentleman with some computer artistry. I guess that's to say he knocked the bears out with his interception.
Gotcha.
That's done by Jorge Cano. And that is on his Twitter. Very interesting. We have a good Shadow says media always underestimate the G-men.
Good.
Danny Booth says, in perfect weather conditions, what's the longest field goal McAdoo can expect Robbie Gould to kick? His leg strength is not what it was.
I'd say 51 yards.
Okay. Let's see here. G. Messenkopf once again says, Giants improved pressure with just four pass rushers is reminiscent of past Super Bowl champions.
Well, that's what they're trying to get to. And really, it helps out the secondary. When you got good cornerbacks like Jenkins and DRC and those guys and Collins, it sure does make it a lot easier for those defensive linemen to get a little bit more time to get in there. But I'll tell you, those guys are all playing well. All Jenkins, right. Man, we don't talk enough about him, Jackrabbit. The guy is just
Janoris,
solid.
He's really good.
He is solid.
Really good.
I mean,
he's better than
rarely,
solid. He's really
rarely
good.
Are you seeing him, you know. He's always near his receiver, and making plays. Yesterday he made a play on just knocking the guy's arm.
Yes.
To get the ball out,
Okay.
It's really good.
I want to real quick, couple more I want to just get to because these people did get in and we're about to run out of time. Nick Welsh says, Jeff, they're awesome. They still make bottle caps, just so you know.
Do they really?
Yeah, that's what he says. Nick Welsh, thank you for that very much. You could send a couple here to the facility. We'll make sure Jeff gets the leftovers after I'm done with most of the bag.
They were good. Purple was my favorite.
Danny Booth says, what do you think about Eli Apple's performance in yesterday's game? Well, he was alert to recover the muff. And that in itself
I saw him make a couple good tackles, too. Good
yes,
reads
he did.
Coming up.
And let's see. Anyone else here who we did not get to today? A bunch of guys kept repeating and different that. Let's see here. B33 says, did Jeff Fiegels ever get that cooking set from Plaxico for giving up his number?
Cooking set? No,
I thought he was
going to
give you
set.
A kitchen.
It was a kitchen, not a cooking set. That would have been too easy, a cooking set. You could buy those on, go to Kmart and buy those. I wanted the kitchen.
You didn't get the kitchen, did you?
I wanted the kitchen.
Okay. finally, last ones. Shadia says, Jackrabbit is having a Pro Bowl year.
No question.
I'm sorry. Obadiah says that. And Satch says, VA to Cleveland, I will be at Brown Stadium wearing my LC jersey. Go Giants.
All right.
And then we have one more, Stephen Markowitz. Final a comment of the day. What do you make of Eric Flowers' play the last month or so?
A little up and down. I think that, he's still got some work. I think his hands he's got to work on his hands. And I only say that because of O'Hara. I read O'Hara's tweets on Flowers all the time, and that's basically his analysis. So
that'll do it for this edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We are here Monday to Friday from 12 noon Eastern time till 1 p.m., 1 hour of Giants talk, your comments, your questions. Hit us up on Twitter at #GiantsChat or give us a call right down the number 201-939-4513. For Jeff Fiegels, I'm Paul Dottino. We'll see you next time.